Hello and welcome to Inside Education. Later in the programme, I'll bring you a reading by the author of one of the winning poems in the recent Seamus Heaney poetry competition organised by the Irish National Teachers Organisation. But first, have you ever visited or participated in the annual Young Scientists exhibition in the RDS? If you have, you may have thought, wouldn't it be great if students at school level and in regions around the country could share some of the excitement around science that is visible at the Young Scientists exhibition? You see, many projects don't even make it past the proposal stage, and those students never have a chance to exhibit their work. Or you may have thought, wouldn't it be great if the activities could be spread more around the year rather than being concentrated on a single week of the year? Well, not only did Sheila Porter have such thoughts, she did something about it. She set up SciFest, and now she's going to tell us what SciFest is.
SciFest is a national initiative which was started originally in 2008. It was launched nationwide, and the aim was to promote a love of STEM, which is science, technology, engineering and maths, and to provide a forum for students to present their investigations and research and present it to the general public.
When I heard it, one of my first questions was, how is SciFest different to the Young Scientists exhibition?
Well, SciFest is different to the Young Scientists exhibition in that it operates on four different levels. The first level is in schools, where schools run in-house science fairs, SciFest at school. And then we have regional ones. We have 15 regional venues in 14 Institutes of Technology and St Mary's College in Derry. And then from that, then, we have our finals like we're having today, where we pick the best project from each of the 15 regional venues. And then the best project today will go forward to the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair in America. So the Young Scientist is one big fair, but this starts at school level and goes right up to the very top. And also, it's very accessible and local and inclusive and free to enter.
So what school level is it intended for?
It's for secondary school students, so from 12 up to 18. All levels can enter. We have three categories: junior, intermediate and senior. And then they can enter in life sciences, physical sciences and technology.
So what kind of projects are entered this year?
Oh, the projects are very varied and the age groups are varied. We have ones from AgriScan that invented an app for agriculture. We have a memory buddy, which is a senior student from Castleblayney, and he has his grandmother had the onset of Alzheimer's, so he's invented a piece of electronic equipment which will enable her to know when to take her tablets and when the social worker will call and so on. We have three little boys from Tralee, and they're looking at using streams to produce electricity. So they're just very varied.
And who judges the projects?
The judges are from all over. We've representatives of Intel. We have also from the various universities, from the Institute of Physics, a couple of teachers as well. So they're all over, but they would all have had experience at either the school level or the regional level in judging. And the judges, we have 14 judges here today judging the Best Project Award, and then we also have three judges from Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland judging the Sustainable Energy Project, which will go forward to the INESPO in The Hague.
And what kind of criteria do they use for judging the projects?
Well, they look that the student has followed the scientific method, that they've come up with an idea, that they have designed experiments and carried out tests, collected data, and then looked at the data, come up with conclusions, and that it's something that is solving a real-world problem, and preferably then something innovative. Although I think that once a student starts work on a project, it becomes their own, and it becomes different as they work on it. So, yeah.
And would these be students who might be also entering projects in the Young Scientists exhibition, or is it completely separate to that?
No, it's not. The two of them complement each other. We get students enter SciFest from the Young Scientists and vice versa. The whole idea, I mean, for both fairs is that we encourage students to pursue their interests in STEM. So we would get about 10% that have been in the Young Scientist would go into SciFest, and I presume it's probably the same for the Young Scientist. I mean, it's all about encouraging them. So if they have a good project here today and it's really successful and they talk to the judges, that'll help them then think more clearly maybe to pursue it and maybe enter it in the Young Scientist or in SciFest again next year.
And what kind of a timeline is involved then for a particular project? If you take, you know, it has to be judged at local level and at regional level and then at national level. So when would students typically start doing them?
A lot of them will probably start in September when they're thinking of doing the Young Scientist. And then depending then, they may continue on and do it in SciFest. But it varies. The SciFest of schools will run all year. But the SciFest of colleges take place mainly in between exams and lectures in the ITs. So that'll be around March, April, May. So it depends. Not all schools will do the SciFest at school. Some will enter directly into the SciFest of college. So I'd say any time from September on, really, they can be working on their projects.
And from what I've heard, you, I think, might be the record holder of having the highest number of projects ever submitted to the Young Scientists exhibition. Would that be right?
Probably. Well, I don't know now so much nowadays, but when I started this project in 2006, I was still teaching and I ran it twice in the Institute of Technology in Tala, and then I was seconded to Intel for 5 years, and now it is set up as a company when my secondment ended. But when I was involved in Loretto College and St. Stephen's Green, at that stage, we always had the highest number. We had at least 26 projects, I think, 1 year, and 65 students. So everybody remarked on the maroon uniforms at Loretto College. But I think that was what inspired me, because other teachers would say, I mean, it's a victim of its own success in that the Young Scientist is absolutely brilliant and it's great to get into it and students love it. But there are a lot don't get in. And that was what then encouraged me then maybe to set up something else to provide other students the same opportunity. But I could see when I was teaching what it did for the students, how they grew in confidence, and it was just fantastic. And today when you talk to some of the students, they'll tell you the same, how much they enjoy today. And we even have some today have come back to help out. Our scorer today, one of the people helping the judges, is a former winner, and she emailed me and asked me could she come along today. So she's ended up, of course, with a job.
And how is it funded at the moment?
At the moment, it's 50-50 private public. SFI Discover, they would be our main partners, and we have a 2-year plan with them. And then we have Intel Ireland that have been partners with SFI from the very beginning, and Boston Scientific have just come on board as project partners since September. And then we've lots of other smaller partnerships with Pharmachemical Ireland, and then a place like the Institute of Physics and the Science Teachers Association.
And you were a science teacher yourself for many years. What do you find is the best way to get students interested in studying science?
I think things like this, because you see, when they do something like this, they have chosen the topic and they go away then and they find out so much, and they realise then how it's science is really applicable to real life and real world. And I think also there's great value in it that they go home and they talk about it at home and they talk about it to their friends, and when they go back to the school it's celebrated. And so I think it really does. When you go to the SciFest at school and you see how all the teachers are working together to put on this science fair, and then teachers from other departments are coming to look at the projects, and it really raises the profile of science and encourages the students to get involved.
And what about for students maybe who don't have the same backup at home or the same support? Does it provide a challenge for them to get them interested in science?
I don't think so, because that's why I originally set SciFest up, was so that students like that could do it within their own school. And then they're also going into their own local IT, so there's a certain amount of pride. And when they go into the IT, then they see the facilities there and their lecturers come and talk to them. So it's all about encouraging them. And because they're starting at this, base level, and then sometimes when the people in the institutes will say to them, I'm working on that at the moment, come in and see me, here's my card. And, you know, so it's all about building relationships and encouragement. And nothing, I think, as a teacher, that's why I love going to the schools, because there's never a bad project. It's all about the student and the effort they put in and how proud they are of it and what they've learned. And they've really learned without realizing what they've learned. You know, so I must say I love it and the students love it, and it's a great experience for everybody.
The exhibition began in 2008. Where do you see it in 5 years' time?
Well, in 5 years' time, I hope that people will see it as a key player in STEM education in Ireland. I mean, we're getting there. People are now talking about it. But at the moment, the numbers in participation is 6,000 this year, and it's increasing by about 25% each year. So what I'd like to see, my dream was always that everybody at least had the opportunity, if they wanted to participate in something like this.
The national finals of SciFest took place recently at the Merino Institute of Education Conference Centre. The winning student was Christopher Carraher from Our Lady Secondary School, Castle Blaney, County Monaghan. He designed a device that looks like the drawer of a cash register, but it draws on technology. It's called a memory buddy. Why did Christopher decide to develop the memory buddy?
Well, a member of my family is suffering from short-term memory loss, maybe the early stage of Alzheimer's. So it was just for them to try and help them on their day-to-day life. And I felt that if this is how they suffer, there'd be more people would suffer the same way. So then friends of the family and that, their mother would be the same as my family. So then they say that they've got the same sort of problems, losing things like keys and phones and forgetting appointments and not taking medicine. And other people who are more serious and actually need a carer or a couple of carers if they need 24-hour care, this can help to coordinate them because they'll know if medicine's taken or not, and it'll help them find things and also appointments. If the carer before has made a doctor's appointment, the next carer in will be able to say, oh, there's a doctor appointment now, and I'll know to take them to it.
And has the member of your family, has she used this? Has she tried it out?
She has a wee bit. I didn't leave it down there just too long, just with the competition and that, just to make sure it didn't get damaged. But after that, I'll be leaving it down for longer. Just let her use it.
So one of the things it does is if you need to take your medicine, a little drawer opens and the medicine comes out. And it also reminds you, because there's a little screen on the top of it, and that reminds you of any appointments you have due.
The doctor's set now for 12 o'clock. That's why these lights flash. Otherwise, they'd be off. It's flashing to draw the person's attention to the screen, and they say, oh, I've got the doctor coming up now. I better go and get ready. So even then, if they forget again, and their next time like they're in the kitchen or wherever this is sitting, they'll see the light again and go over, oh, yeah, the doctor. And then they'll go and get ready.
And you have four images across the bottom. You have keys, a phone, a handbag, and a pair of glasses. What are they for?
That's your finder. If you press one of the buttons then, like say the phone, there's a buzzer will go off to help you find it. Okay, so then you just follow the buzzing.
So, have you any plans to develop this further?
I'd be hoping to take it to a company or that and just try and mass produce it. A few final touches and maybe a few more features to it, and then take it from there.
Do you know if anything like it exists already?
I've done some research and I haven't been able to find anything. Each thing would be available separate, like you can get key finders or there's like certain medicine dispensers and that. But the problem with them is there's very few are actually checked on the internet, so you have to actually be in the room to program them.
So the internet connectivity is very important for this?
Yeah, because it means that I could be at home now and set the event to go to the doctor so that she'll see it. I don't actually have to go down and be with it. So I could be anywhere in the world and set to say she's a doctor now at 2 o'clock or when set to her schedule for medicine.
And will it be possible then for you to check that she has actually gone to the doctor, for example?
If she's gone to the doctor, well, I suppose you could ring the doctor. But the likes of medicine and that, if the medicine isn't taken, you're going to get an email to say it wasn't taken after half an hour, 2 hours. And then if the medicine is taken, you get an email to say that. So say 2 hours later it's still not taken, you'll obviously ring to check up and make sure everything's okay and then remind them to take it yourself.
And that was Christopher Carraher from Our Lady Secondary School, Castle Blaney, County Monaghan, who is the overall prize winner in the competition, and he will represent Ireland in the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair in May 2015. Another award, the Irish Science Teachers Association Trophy, was won by three young brothers from St Brendan's College, Killarney, County Kerry. Harry, James and Jack Knobloch. Their project investigated the feasibility of micro-hydroelectricity generation in Ireland. I first asked Harry to tell me what the project was about.
Our project is about water wheels in Ireland and are they feasible? So we're looking into putting them on rivers around Ireland and can they generate electricity?
And what did you find, James?
We found that it can be done throughout Ireland and we interviewed many people and we found that it should be done throughout Ireland and it is a feasible cause.
And Jack, how did you go about answering that question?
Well, we took samples from two rivers and we found out how much water went through the rivers and then we went to see...
How did you do that?
We found the width of both rivers and then we measured seven depths. This gave us a 2D screenshot. Then using 3/4 of a bottle of water, we measured out 10 metres and then we timed how long it took the bottle of water to do the 10 metres. This gave us then a 3D screenshot, so we could tell how much water went through the river an hour, every couple of hours, a day, a week, and in the year.
Now, Jack has been talking about screenshots there, Harry. Can you tell me how you took the measurements from the measurements in the river to the screenshots?
Well, when we say screenshot, what it means is when we got the average depth and the width, we multiply them to each other. So then we just got a rectangular shape, say, that told us how much water was in one particular point. And then when we extrapolated that with the water bottle, so we just kind of enlarged that and made it 3D then, so we could see how much was going through in a particular space. So then timing it, we knew how much of that was going through in, as you said, in hours and days.
Was that on the computer?
We just did it onto Microsoft Excel. So we just put all our data onto that. So we'd done that actually on the river. So we have the tools out and we did it.
So, James, why was that an important question to investigate?
Well, we needed to see if both of the rivers had enough water flowing through them to put mill wheels on them and to see if this could be repeated through other rivers. Because we'd seen examples of mill wheels that were working on rivers smaller than the Claydog and the Salan, and we found that they would both have enough water flowing through to have mill wheels generating electricity on them.
So your response was that, yes, it was possible, isn't that right?
Yeah, it was.
But would it be cost-effective?
Well, it would, but half of it you would receive a grant for. Like, we went to, our case study was someone who had, Mr. Sean Buckley, who has a wildlife park just outside Clarny, and he needed a mill wheel because he had lemurs, monkeys, and they were costing him a small fortune to heat his monkey enclosure. And so he then, there's no company in Ireland that actually makes mill wheels on a large scale, so he had to get it custom made in Dublin. It cost over €14,000, but half it he received as a grant from Grant Aid.
So how much electricity then can be generated from one of these mill wheels?
Well, his mill wheel generated 6 kilowatt hours per hour, and he only had a small, like, river powering it. So if you used a bigger river, and because he was doing that, like, on his own, that was his own private thing, he did the engineering himself. He had no background in engineering. So if a college took it up, well, you could make it so much more efficient and make it 10 kilowatts per hour.
Obviously, the electricity is generated at the river. Does it need to be used near the river as well, or can the electricity be brought from the river to wherever you want to?
Yeah, it can be transported back from the river using electricity wires and brought into homes and communities where it can be then consumed and sold.
So why do you think we don't use more water generation of electricity in Ireland?
Jack? It can be the whole thing of investing the money into it first. People do not feel they'll get a surplus back. Like, Sean Buckley made a surplus back after 3 or 4 years, and he's now making income from it.
But it took him 3 or 4 years to get there.
Yeah, it did.
Okay, do you have any plans to develop your project, Harry or James? Harry?
In the future, well, we really hope that we could work with a college or university to say what is the most efficient design, what angle everything should be at, how much water, what height the water needs to drop from. All these questions that could be done in a higher level engineering course, that could be done for PhD material or dissertations.
One risk of generating electricity using water, James, and I'm looking at a graph on your display here, is that the amount of rainfall varies throughout the year in Ireland. How can that be dealt with in generating electricity?
Well, really, we use the most electricity in the winter, and if you look at it, we have the most rain in the winter as well. So both these needs and facts coincide with each other. And as well, you put a weir along the water to build it up, and so you have a pipe channeling it off, so there'd always be water coming into the pipe. You could also make natural weirs so the fish could get through, or kayakers could get through the rivers.
They were the Knobloch brothers from Killarney, County Kerry, talking about their project at SciFest 2014. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. The final person I spoke to at SciFest was one of the directors of the project, Peter Brabazon. I asked Peter to tell me how he got involved with SciFest.
Well, I got personally involved because I have a real interest in science and engineering in particular. I'm an engineer, and down the years I've seen the benefit of doing things, so inquiry-based learning. In other words, actually learning by doing. And that's what I really like about this project, because It's local, it's in all the 14 institutes of technology, and it's also in a lot of schools now as well. So it's right around the country, and also it's very accessible because there's no fee to enter. And therefore it's very attractive, and it actually matches very well to the national curricula now as it's changing to be more hands-on. Well, originally I was working for the department in a program called Discover Science and Engineering, where I was the director there. And at the time, Sheila Porter, who's the organizer today, came to me with somebody from Intel to say that they had trialed this new idea in the Institute of Technology in Tella, and could we go and make it nationwide? And they were looking for funding, and I said, this is a fantastic project, because it not only, as I said, it's very inclusive, but also it's very, very cost-effective as well. And at that time, my drive was to get more people into science, technology, engineering and maths.
And is it working?
I think fundamentally it's working. The reason is, well, you'll see the growth. We now have 6,059 participants in 2014. In just 7 years, that's been built up on an average rate of about 25% a year. We've just now, under our new chairman of our board, Brian McGrath, the president of DCU, we've just set out a three-year strategy to grow a factor of three more. In other words, when I'm talking to you in 3 years' time, we will have 15,000 students will have entered around the country. And then the big thing, of course, is they go abroad to represent Ireland. For example, this year, winners today will go to Pittsburgh. And our history there is very good as well. The last two who went last year were winners there as well. And that's out of 1,800 international students.
And why do you think there's a need for incentives to get people interested in the subjects you're talking about, science, technology, engineering and mathematics?
Well, at one level, of course, it's government policy. And the reason for that is it's because there's a real talent shortage in these areas. For example, I work particularly with the ICT sector, the computer sector. And there are 7,000 vacancies now, the real talent shortage there. And so if young people want to be studying something that they might get them a job in one sense, but the other thing, more importantly, is to fulfill their own dreams and career paths as well. Because, you know, there are some really interesting jobs that weren't created in the time of their parents. So part of this is to show them projects that shows them what it's really like outside in the real world.
And what was it that got you interested in science to the extent that you decided to study engineering?
That goes back to a mathematics teacher that I had in school, and I was really interested in mathematics. I then thought, well, I might be an accountant. And then I went to a presentation by a young engineer, and I said, well, that's for me. Sure, it's a more hands-on person than a theoretical person, and I must say it's brought me partly around the world, as far as India and places like that, and worked a lot in Russia. And it's sort of allowed me to meet a lot of different and interesting people as well. So it's not just all about techie stuff. It's also about communications and things like that, you know.
And it's also about the power of good teaching.
Absolutely. Going right back, you know, the key influences are no doubt about it are the teachers, the guidance counsellors, and also your parents. And the other key influence I'd like to mention are those perhaps who are already working in an area that might be interested in, go and talk to them. Are those who perhaps are studying an area that you might be interested in, go and talk to them. Because it may not be for you, and not everybody's going to be a scientist or engineer either, but we want to fit people in the right boxes for themselves.
And finally, given the interest of this programme, I suppose we're particularly interested in the teaching element of it. Can you say a little bit more about that teacher who got you so interested in maths when you were in school?
I can say Mr. McCool, who came from Donegal, was very young and energetic, and he just saw no barriers, I think it was it. And I was sort of average at mathematics at the time, and I was just sort of, well, this guy actually taught me how to think outside the box a little bit. He was very enthusiastic. The one thing he said to us, I remember we all laughed at the time, was that mathematics was a language. I now understand that, and that it's actually a language more widely spoken than any other language in the world, because if I go even to China, people use the same mathematics.
Finally, on this week's programme, I'm happy to bring you a reading of one of the winning poems in the INTO Seamus Heaney Poetry Competition. The poem is called Pieta, and it was written in the Irish language by my colleague in the Merino Institute of Education, Marie Welton. Marie will now read the poem for us.
Istonisha scrief me a guivne er unkelum a for boss ectusna blina, Pieta on tedla tho er. I'm sure na nolik govila agus a tridig, hastig uhi kurta hortart, a carpet disconach ag blinis nocha, ac le cawr o de grahar, dairig le I fein chorishtach sa glúistán. Humanimer o de chiach ferme, sis an causa gar veerler dus, triach an mila sir o huigan sin, ga himmel chahar charki. I varhala an ospedale, hug portir cahir rohede, vi oring RTE gaida kenach sa siopa biog, ni eithing a rolei nach meha an aune a leiv. Las mother horis the humre in Isloch na han coliacta, niemer or lava gadaskanoch in ni haleron. Robol me I in no prune plashtuk. Thuskal she the horis agus ruig me a kahir sus in akalat. Balir o the hanush gavurthu solos on a manga. The inn of idiha egrada therapa, the hanga egramu the veil, da bon lia na bali agus the kraken. Fulinct gan chlauson, sovriacht idda lawher. Spéisio gud fósan erim, búrtart gudóca gan ghae vúr an dín o hiana chróna me hiac, an vúrt céine da grahara sa walia dúrtsi, gíra fada gan tasha. Iarc si gud cian sa art, thara cianon a brinna, hín si láf amach cúat, hóg tú an láf chéna. Tail loiva queen kinalta lohrocht realta. Lena lovela hog she spoonsha glass o the glina ishka, ak hepir hi ea ardu quig the veil. Quitig me lay agus glach tu le tall the hiana vuima. In anon an charta nolog o veraka oskion the lapa, be I the vaher an van behovok thee I the hail fos. Near fos thu reeve, ach behar húl der séif sé ar an talamh. Gach maden líontá taiscamar na húchtar le na lebáine, gach fór líontá an mhuilin le hór na órga, gach lá húchá gheán athar dhuine páistí de gréfhéir. I lár bhí anair 2014, hig de bháthar rí sé gáthir rotha, de chónra agus cairn de ithir hebhar mhar a rua in acha lé, Yes, Mila Dina Ella Lee, Egda Uig, San Ugt Fantuch.
If you'd like to read the text of Marie's poem, it is on page 13 of this month's In Touch, a publication of the Irish National Teachers Organisation, which is available online. I'll put a link to it on the programme's website. Well, that's all we've time for on this evening's programme. I'd like to thank my guests, Sheila Porter, Christopher Carraher, Harry James and Jack Knobloch, Peter Brabazon and Marie Welton. If you'd like to feature an idea or an event on a future programme, you can write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to almost 200 podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.